All right, good afternoon, everyone. Call this meeting to order. I like the gavel. And next step, the minutes to our last meeting in May were distributed online. Does anyone have comments or corrections to those minutes? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. Does anyone wish to make changes to the agenda for today's meeting? Seeing none, the agenda is adopted. And the Chancellor has approved all of the motions that we passed at May's meeting. I will briefly summarize what those were. I can do that in groups. There are 12 motions. The first one was the list of degree candidates. The next one is a group of four motions that were all new minors. These were brought forward from the Curricular Affairs Committee. Those were all approved. The next two had to do with the O requirement for core courses and an attempt to make those courses comply with the expectations of the O designation. The next two, numbers 8 and 9, were unit criteria for two of the units. And the last three all had to do with the elimination of the Faculty Appeals and Oversight Committee, which was a committee in the Faculty Senate, and to reassign its responsibilities to other parts of Faculty Senate. All right. This being my first meeting, I skipped the roll call. Jane, would you please call the roll?
Okay. Welcome, everybody. Hopefully you can hear me online. If you can't, let me know. I'll turn up some volume somewhere. And if you are here representing somebody, you're an alternate. When I call your representative's name, please respond and let us know who you are. Thank you. Abramovich.
Present.
Albertson.
Present.
Alexiev. Anyone here for Vladimir? Bandopadhyay. Brett Hart. Anyone attending for Doni? Brown.
Here.
Okay. C.
Here.
Chambers.
Here.
Chen. Anyone here for Cheng Fu Chen? Cook. Davis.
Here.
Thank you. Fallon. Fochisato.
Here.
George Bettisworth. Anyone here for Richenda? Richenda?
Is that CLA?
Yes. Okay, Rob Duke.
Yes.
Rob Duke here for Richenda. Gustafson.
Yes.
Hardy Cindy. Hardy Sarah.
Here.
Thank you. Healy.
Here.
Heaton.
Here.
Henry.
Here.
Jensen.
Here.
Johnston. Jolie. Larden. Anyone here for Cecile? Okay. Lawler. Marr.
On the phone.
Thank you. McEachern.
Here.
Right. Meyer.
Here.
Okay, thanks. Nadine. Anyone here for Elizabeth Nadine? Newberry, I think he'll be coming later. Chung Sang. Radenbaugh.
Yeah, on the phone.
Thank you. Reynolds.
Here.
Short.
Here.
Valentine.
Here.
Weber.
Here.
Webley. Winfrey.
Here.
Windsor.
Here.
Yari. Anyone here for John Yari? Zhang. Anyone here for Xiong Zhang? Okay. And I'd like to acknowledge our ex officio members. We have Dabu Misroff for United Academics, Libby Eddy for Interim Registrar. Do we have anyone from Staff Council today? Okay, we may later. Anyone from ASUAF? Any students? Okay. We have Paul Lair from College of Natural Sciences and Mathematics. Okay. And, of course, our provost and our vice provost, Susan Henricks and Alex Fitz and Chancellor Rogers. Okay, thank you.
Jane, one note here. I believe that as an alternate for Cheng Fu Chen, Debu Misra was going to fill that role.
He will be attending.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, next up is remarks from the president. That's me. And I had a few things to tell you about. One is that Faculty Alliance met for our annual two-day retreat in August. We met here in Fairbanks, so we were able to meet with many of the, well, five of the statewide administrators. We're optimistic that we're developing good relationships with them and stronger communication with them. In particular with Pat Gamble. We have several topics from the Faculty Alliance that will be on the agenda later in this meeting, so I'll save my remarks on those until we get to them. There are a couple of other notes. One is that the employee benefit for tuition waivers and dependence of this benefit on satisfactory grades by the dependent, that question has been settled, and the outcome or the new policy will be announced by statewide shortly. I can describe it to anyone who is concerned about it. I'm mentioning it here because this came up in Faculty Senate last year. It is, as far as I can see, in line with what the Faculty Senate preferred. The eLab, in other words, electronic labs, for core science courses. As you recall, this Senate considered a draft policy for those science labs last spring. We made some amendments, reached a consensus on that draft. We didn't vote on to approve the draft, but we reached a consensus on the draft. That draft has been sent to UAA and UAS for consideration, and their Senates are now looking at it. We will not see that again probably until spring semester. To let you know where that stands. There have been some articles written on UA Healthcare, some updates and explanations on what's happening and why. Those are being posted on the statewide website, and because we found them informative and useful, we have linked to those articles from the UAF Faculty Senate homepage. So if you just go to our homepage, you can find those articles, and I encourage you to look at them if you have questions. One of the articles, for example, deals with the consequences of the national health care reform on UAF or on UA benefits. I know that's something people have questions on. And another topic is the online system for web timesheets for exempt employees, including all the faculty. That, as you know, the non-exempt employees are now on web timesheets, and that system has been up and running for the better part of the year. And the version for exempt timesheets is in development. The pilot is expected to run in November and December, and you should expect to see faculty moving on to this in the first quarter of next year, so between January and March. And the one last topic I have for you is the electronic version of faculty activity report. You may remember we talked about this in the spring. There was a subcommittee that looked at at several software packages that were available, and the Senate voted well, or the committee voted in favor of the Faculty 180 software. That is going to be run as a pilot system for UAF starting later this fall. Several units have been signed up, but because the integration of this system with the UAF computer system has taken a little longer than expected, I'm not sure that that is going to be mandatory for those units. But we will be doing a pilot later this fall and into the winter. And any of you who want to see the system, all you need to do is ask for a login, and we'd be happy to provide that. Any questions? All right. Sorry? Right. Yeah, it's not up and so it's not going to be mandatory, but it will be visible to at least some faculty. Yeah, I had gotten that note from my dean as well, and because I hadn't confirmed with the provost office, I wasn't sure exactly what the plan was now. But we will be seeing it later on this fall into the winter. Anything else? Yes.
Later on this fall.
That's right. That's right. So it's not going to be the official activity report for any units this year, but it will be available for tryout, if you will. Okay? Does that make sense? Well, I'm not sure yet. It's an evolving situation, and I'm just trying to keep you updated on where we stand right now. As far as I know, it's not mandatory for any units because of this delay, but it will be available later this year for people to look at and to try out. Yes?
Is this tuition waiver, what exactly has been decided?
I can tell you from memory what we were told at the Faculty Alliance meeting. This may not be exactly what they announced, so please remember that caveat. My recollection is that the dependent will be required to maintain a grade point average, a satisfactory grade point average, equivalent to what's required for other kinds of financial aid. So this essentially becomes a type of financial aid. There has been a decision about that this does not get crosswise with the FERPA laws because the employee does not see the grade of the student, only whether or not the student is eligible for tuition benefits. There's no retroactive collection of tuition if the student does not do well in a class. It's just that after that class, the student is not eligible for tuition waiver. The dependent is not eligible for tuition waiver again until that person's GPA is up above the satisfactory level. And it's that the dependent's responsibility to make that happen. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Remarks from our president-elect, David Valentine.
In the interest of time, in the interest of time, I'm going to defer my remarks until the second half, where I've got a couple of agenda items.
Then remarks from our chancellor, Brian Rogers.
Thanks. It's good to see everyone back. You know what? We've got a lot going on in the summer. On our campuses, but it's not the same until you and the students are back on campus, and it's really exciting to see you here and to see the level of activity again. Most of what I want to say, I'll say on Thursday at convocation. You're all invited to the convocation. I do want to just touch on a couple of things. One, budget status. We're still in the process of system office review of UAF's budget request for next year. That'll go to the Board of Regents for first review in September and for their decision in November. We do know that the governor wants to keep a fairly tight lid on growth in the operating budget, which makes next year, I think, will be a challenging year for us, but more to come on that. I want to salute the Senate for taking on the general education revitalization. I think that is the one most important thing going on academically at UAF, and I appreciate the time that people are willing to put into it. It is a significant change after after 20 plus years. But I think what this really defines what it is we expect our students to learn while they're here. This is an area where your decision making is primary. Anything we can do from the administration to support that decision and the process will do. Finally, just a note on the Women's Center. As you're probably aware, May has rescinded the earlier decision concerning the Women's Center. I want to apologize to the Senate for not catching the lack of involvement in that process. That's my fault, not hers, since she was new to the university. We will be appointing an advisory committee for the Women's Center, and I'm soliciting Senate recommendations for membership on that advisory committee. And second, soliciting Senate nominations for people to look at how we support students generally, not only the multicultural, but other groups, whether it be international students, GLBD students, Asian students, and any of our student groupings, how do we best support? Some have professional support, some don't, and what's the right way of doing that? I'll be putting together a task force to do recommendations over the course of this year and would appreciate your input into that process.
Any questions for the Chancellor? All right, remarks from our Provost, Susan Henricks.
To get back to the Faculty 180 issue, what I anticipate is that over the course of the fall, we're going to make the software available to everyone. I know that everyone probably won't look at it, but we'll make it available to everyone. What we would like to do is to get everybody familiar with it, using it, entering their information in it over the course of this academic year so that we can implement it in the fall. We won't be able to have a formal trial this year, but we would like people to be able to use the software easily by the time the activity reports are due again in next fall. We're going to work out a system where people can get some training on use of the software, work out a system where you can get some help desk kind of assistance as you work your way through it. And so just stay tuned for further updates. What I'd like to spend the rest of my remarks time on is the UAF performance report. As every year, we're required to submit both to statewide and to the state in advance of our budget request information on our performance for the prior academic and fiscal year. This year, statewide and the state decided to make it interesting by rather systematically revamping our reporting requirements and changing many of the metrics. Now we have the ability to set many of our own metrics where before they were all assigned. That's going to probably be evolving a bit over the next couple of years as we decide firmly what kinds of metrics we're going to want to be submitting at this time of year every year. We are trying to align them better with the performance indicators that we're using for accreditation so that we'll minimize the duplication of effort in those two areas. UAF performance last year, once again, was outstanding as far as I'm concerned. We had all-time bests in many areas. For instance, produced 833 high-demand job area degrees, 84 engineering degrees, which wasn't quite the all-time best, but was more than double, not more than double, just about double the number of 5 years ago. Some other good trends are that we produced 190,000 student credit hours last year about. That's up 15% from a similar measure in FY08. Our retention for all students that are doing well academically, reasonably well, that is with a GPA or two or above, baccalaureate-seeking students, retention for those students is between 80 and 90%. The only students that aren't retained very well, as you'll, it won't be any surprise to you, are those students that are failing, that have GPAs below 2.0. And so it's becoming increasingly clear that the way to improve our retention and graduation rates is to reduce the number of students who do not succeed academically. And it's certainly not about reducing our standards, but rather giving the students the timely help that they need to meet the academic standards that we have. Graduation rates are up to 35%. Now, mind you, that's not as high as we would like to get to, but it's certainly an improvement, and we want to keep on that trend. In the research arena, many encouraging signs as well. We did $117 million in research expenditures. Now, that's a little bit down from the RF-fueled peak of $124 million the previous year, but considering the loss of DOD funding for the Arctic Region Supercomputing Center, that's still excellent performance. We had 50 PhD graduates and more than $200,000 per capita research faculty FTE expenditure, which is much more than any of our peer institutions can boast. So as a university, we're doing very well. You can be proud of all the good work that all of you, all of your students are doing. I'm hoping that we'll be able to keep on these trends for future years. But there are challenges ahead. As everybody knows, federal sequestration may happen in January. That's going to impact our ability to get research funding. Less research funding will be available. And also this year, for the first time in several years, enrollment it has not increased. And we're still waiting for the final figures, but it seems that some global statewide factor is affecting enrollment at all three MAUs. All of them seem to be down. Maybe economics can also be related to the fact that there are fewer high school aged students in the state these days than there were a few years ago. So congratulations on all your good work, and we'll see how things progress next year.
David, did you have a question for the provost?
I just had a quick clarification. On the Faculty 180, will there be a trial next year? Has it essentially just been pushed back a year for the trial, or were you going to have a more broad participation next fall?
I'm aiming for broad participation next fall. We'll have to see how our implementation goes this spring in terms of getting people familiar with the software, whether people are finding it easy to use and so forth. But my goal is certainly to have everybody or nearly everybody submitting their activity reports using the software next fall.
I would like to make one comment on the Faculty 180. One of the reasons that the committee was in favor of this piece of software is that it appears to be intuitive and relatively easy to use, and so it shouldn't take a lot of training for any of the faculty to pick up. The main training that I recall that would be needed is for people who have long publication lists or lists of other activities that that go back into the past that they would like to import. There are import functions, and we'll need to set up ways for people to use those. Are there any other questions for the provost? Seeing none, let's move on. So our first item of new business is a resolution offered by the Committee on the Status of Women. This is a resolution to reaffirm commitment to shared governance. Jane Weber, would you please take that?
I appreciate the Chancellor's remarks about keeping the Women's Center open. Thank you. And this is basically just a resolution urging university administration to commit to shared governance in decisions of this board. No. Any questions?
Questions or comments from anyone on the Senate? Someone call the question? Do I hear a second? All right. All those in favor of this resolution, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, say nay. The resolution passes unanimously. Thank you. The next one, item B, motion endorsing the 2012-2013 Faculty Senate Committee membership. And you see a copy of this in your agenda. The membership shifted a small amount from what you saw last May due to some resignations and reassignments on the Senate and on its committees. Are there any comments on this? Yes, Ken.
This is the one that has the elimination of the two for all faculty senators per unit minimum, correct?
No, this is just a motion to affirm the current committee membership. Yeah. Anyone else?
This is Izetta Chambers. I was a bit surprised when I was appointed to the Faculty Development Committee because I wasn't at the meeting. So I guess somebody appointed me without me being there. And I signed into the meeting on time, but the meeting convened earlier than was originally scheduled.
Sure. Yeah, Izetta, to be clear, the appointments are done in the Administrative Committee and by the Faculty Senate leadership, not actually during the Senate meeting itself. So you wouldn't have, you didn't miss anything there.
Okay.
Yeah, and I apologize that you didn't get advance notice of which committee you've been appointed to. That was an oversight.
That's okay. I don't mind being on it. It was just sort of surprising. I thought I was sent the wrong email. So.
Sure, no. Anyone else? Do I hear a motion to affirm this?
So move.
Second? Thank you. All those in favor of affirming this committee membership as shown, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, say nay. And this also carries unanimously. The third item, number C, motion to delete the MAT in biology program submitted by the Graduate Academic and Advisory Committee. Vincent C., would you please explain this?
Sure. Thank you. Donnie is the new chair of the Graduate Academic and Advisory Committee, and she asked me to represent the committee on the discontinuation of the MAT in biology. This was a recommendation as a result of the program review process. There are no students enrolled in the program, it's my understanding, since 2003, and there's no proposed impact on other programs, personnel, students, or budget, and GAC convened and voted on 8/30/2012 in favor of discontinuing the program.
Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
Are any faculty lines getting affected by this?
No, I think Doug Schammel, who passed away, was the one who was very passionate about doing this, and right now nobody in the biology program has time or resources to teach in this program.
Anyone else? Someone call the question? Do I hear him? Yeah, Cindy did? All right. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Excellent. And all in favor of this motion, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. Are there any abstentions? Motion passes unanimously. Number D, reaffirmation of a resolution in support of allowing candidates for promotion, tenure, or comprehensive review to opt for open meetings. This is submitted by the Administrative Committee. There is a background statement on this motion. Right page. This background statement reviews the history of this particular resolution. It effectively has been passed by the Faculty Senate each year since fall of 2007. This year it has been slightly revised for clarity and to update the years in the motion. So it is just slightly different from last year's version, but not in terms of content. Is there any discussion of this resolution? All right, to review, this is a resolution that urges the promotion and tenure committees at the unit level to vote in favor of open meetings. This does not mean that the meeting will be open, but it means that the candidate then has the choice to request an open meeting. If the committee chooses to have its meetings be closed, then the candidate has no choice and cannot attend. Some committees have stated that closed meetings are easier logistically they're easier logistically or because they feel that they want to have discussions without the candidates present. The Faculty Senate in past years has urged committees not to take this position. One can discuss the reasons pro and con, but the Faculty Senate has repeatedly voted in favor of allowing the candidates the choice here rather than the committee. Reasons for this are stated in the rationale of the resolution. Any discussion? All right. Do I hear a motion on this? Dane. All right. Second?
Second.
All right, good. All those in favor of this resolution, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. Abstentions? No abstentions. All right, this passes unanimously as well. That takes care of new business. And we are 15 minutes ahead of schedule, which is fabulous.
Excellent job.
Yeah.
First day.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how we do by the end. There are some big items in the agenda. So I would suggest that we postpone the first item. Well, Cindy Hardy is here. You want to go ahead with that?
Sure.
All right. So we'll go ahead with the first discussion item. Which is discussion item A on the Complete College America Status Report, and that discussion will be led by David Ballantyne, and we'll also hear from Cindy Hardy.
So last year we received an invitation, actually the state of Alaska received an invitation from Complete College America to join in that effort to improve retention and speed up graduation rates. In response to that, the Faculty Senate from UAF said that responded that we would prefer not to join with Complete College America for a number of reasons. Among them was not that we differed with the goals, but in fact we differed with them about whether their prescriptions were appropriate for UAF. The two other MAU Faculty Senates, UAA and UA Southeast, both the Faculty Senates of both of those institutions also responded similarly. I, along with other representatives from UAF, from UAA and UAS, visited Baltimore for a Complete College America workshop on retention, essentially to get a bit more information about Complete College America, and we learned quite a bit about the ways in which they are trying to revise remedial education or get rid of remedial education altogether through mainstreaming and other efforts. Following the workshop, a number of us got together with President Gamble virtually and with Dana Thomas in order to give the feedback, which was still negative from all three MAUs, at least the faculty from all three MAUs. In response to the information that he received, President Gamble has written a memo to, which is the attachment in the agenda, to Governor Parnell, in which he has fed back up the recommendation that the state of Alaska not join with Complete College America. Again, emphasizing three things, I suppose. One is that we agree with the goals. Two is that we disagree with the one-size-fits-all prescription. And three, which is where I'm going to ask Cindy Hardy to chip in, is that we are already we already have a number of efforts ongoing to increase our student success that seem to be bearing fruit pretty well. So at this point, I'm going to let Cindy jump in from developmental ed.
Okay. One of the attachments that you got over the weekend was part of a certification. First of all, I'm currently chair of the Department of Developmental Education, which means that I work with faculty not only here on campus, but at CTC and all the rural campuses, because we have developmental ed on all campuses. And I think the reason David asked me to speak is that I piped up at an admin committee meeting and said, hey, wait, we don't do remedial education here at UAF. In fact, statewide, our attempt to address the needs of students who come in underprepared is with the philosophy of developmental education, which means we address the whole student. So that's kind of where we're coming from. What you got was, part of it was, I think, the executive summary for a national certification report that our department's in the process of putting together. And we spent last year gathering data, crunching it, looking at it, trying to figure out what it meant, and putting together, I have a copy of it here, a rather huge report complete with multiple appendices that we're sending to the National Association of Developmental Educators for advanced certification of our department. So that's just to give you the one that says departmental activities, research findings. That's kind of a summary report that gleans out some of the data in there. So that's what you're looking at. We have one more step to go in our certification process, which is a departmental self-study where we're going to be all of us filling out some survey questions and compiling that and sending it off, and we expect that within the year we'll have that certification. So one of the things we found is that what we do is actually working, and we looked at things pre- and post-mandatory placement, and our department was really involved, and the SADC committee and the Senate were really involved in implementing mandatory placement. It wasn't that we went from 25% success rate to 75%. The increments were small, but there are definitely increases across the board. And the other thing we noticed is that students were having better success in courses that depended on previous information if they had gone ahead at that point and set their prerequisites. So that courses that had English 111 as a prerequisite, for example, were seeing higher success rates. Math 107, higher success rates pre- and post-mandatory placement. So we're not statisticians, although Dana Gracie, who put this together, does have a psychology degree, so she's had some familiar with statistics. But we work closely with Ian Olson and Laura, whose name I'm forgetting, to put that together. Anyway, I guess my sense is that we are doing things and they're working. There's some things that we're doing, like the math fast track, which is mentioned in here, which we've been having sort of struggles to keep funded within our college, but that's kind of our own political issue. But it is a program that works that we're sort of having to struggle to keep going. So we keep doing things, we keep innovating. Some of the things we keep doing, some of the things go away for reasons that are not anything we have control of. But I don't want to whine. I just want to talk about the good stuff. Anyway, is that kind of what you wanted to hear? Okay. We have the larger report. Susan, you have a copy, and Brian, you should have a copy.
Yeah, I think the main thing that I wanted to have come out of this was that there is no lack of commitment on the part of UAF towards achieving the goals that CCA, the Complete College America, is after. It's merely a question of how to do it. Is there any other discussion on this?
Seeing none, we'll move on to the next topic. And that is course management systems at UAF, and the one we use now is Blackboard. David Valentine.
So I have a love-hate relationship with Blackboard, dating back to when I first used it maybe 8, 9, 10 years ago. And to my way of thinking and to some of my colleagues, it's been somewhat frustrating because with each upgrade it seems to be becoming more difficult to use. At the end of last spring, I contacted President Reynolds about my frustration, saying something about some quixotic adventure against windmills of Blackboard. And she said, "Are you sure you want to take this on?" Well, fast forward to the Faculty Alliance retreat that Jennifer mentioned in her remarks. And this issue came up when we spoke with the statewide officer of director of OIC. Thank you, Carl Kowalski. And the issue of Blackboard came up there, and Carl said that at the statewide level, they're becoming increasingly concerned with the use of Blackboard because the expenses associated with Blackboard are increasing a great deal. So we are in a situation in which at least some faculty, I don't want to claim that I'm representative, but at least some faculty have indicated some frustration, and the director of OIT has indicated some concern about the continuation of Blackboard for different reasons. This is tied to a little bit of background research that I did looking around at what other campuses have been doing with respect to course management systems. Blackboard is not the only course management system out there. There's at least three others that are being used to various extents in other campuses. One study that I found online was from it was a self-study done by the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, in which a task force was put together to look at essentially usability from the standpoint of various user groups, faculty, students, and they were given a chance to use a couple of different course management systems, the chief two being Blackboard and Moodle, which is an open source alternative. The self-study, which the link is provided for in the agenda, was completely unambiguous in terms of the preference. Both the students and the faculty widely preferred Moodle, to the point where the University of North Carolina at Charlotte decided to allow the contract with Blackboard to expire and adopt Moodle as the new one, despite whatever investments they had in it. I'm not claiming that UNC Charlotte is a good proxy for us. There are a number of issues that would have to be addressed along the way towards any kind of revision or revisiting of what course management system is used here at UAF, chief among them being faculty concerns and student concerns, but also what about the other two MAUs in Alaska? There's a lot of benefits to having all three MAUs use the same course management systems. So we are beginning, I'd like to begin an effort towards ensuring that whatever happens with respect to adoption of a new course management system, if any, that the faculty voice is heard loud and clear with respect to what we would like. So we are going to set up a discussion page for the Faculty Senate that's essentially going to solicit your input, your ideas with respect to this. We are beginning efforts with the ITEC, that's the Statewide Instructional Technology Committee, to start to explore how we might go about thinking about what course management system we should have in the future.
All right, I'll add one more note from the Faculty Alliance meeting. There is active interest also among the Alliance representatives from UA Southeast and UAA. And there was immediate move in the Faculty Alliance to set up a statewide task force to look at this. And but we reconsidered and said, well, let's start the discussion within our own institutions first. And then we will move it later in the fall, move it to a statewide discussion. So you also realize this is a very active topic. It might actually happen that we might actually decide to move away from Blackboard. So please do participate in the discussion. What I'm thinking we will do is send out an initial email to everybody laying out the situation, so you'll have it in writing to refer to. And you can reply to that message, or you can sign on to the Faculty Senate discussion site and we'll give you instructions on how to do that. So everybody should feel free to chime in this online discussion. That gives us a way to have everyone involved, and we are not confined by the time we have available in the meeting. Any discussion of this now? Yes.
Just a quick comment. When we are discussing all this, let's keep in mind that the rural faculty, they use the blackboard quite, you know, they have to train the students, the distance students, you know, remote students. So before we move away, I know that many of us can just easily say go to Trudel or whatever it is. But what, I'm sorry, I got Trudel out of you, so don't know anything else.
Like
but,
it.
But it is a really difficult thing to engage 9 students who are remote in other places. So before we move away, we need to make sure that they are taken care of first before we bring it to on campus.
I'd really like to emphasize one thing. We are nowhere near any kind of recommendation even. I'm speaking for myself when I say how frustrated I am, but that doesn't mean that, we are at the very beginning stages of attempting to get a discussion going. I'd like to hear from a lot of faculty about their experiences, their preferences, their constraints, and so forth, so that we have the most informed possible process.
Mm-hmm. And I agree that's a very good point about the rural campuses. We do have a number of them represented on the Faculty Senate, but another thing we can do is include the alternates in this discussion and make sure that they're also on the mailing list and invited to contribute. And that would somewhat broaden the number of people who are involved. So thank you for that. Anyone else?
This is Todd from the rural campuses.
Hi, Todd.
I Blackboard is getting, it's very slow, and I appreciate, you know, looking into it, obviously. I mean, with Google Docs and other stuff, I think there can be alternatives if we decide to go there.
Yeah, an issue with Google Docs is that it is, we'll leave that for the online discussion, but that's a good point. We'll put that in as a part of the discussion.
Yeah, just not a catch-all.
Right. And one of the reasons for suspecting that we ought to look at alternatives to Blackboard is that only a relatively small number of courses at UAF actually use Blackboard, and there is resistance among many of the faculty to using it. And so it's one hope is that there would be that faculty would be more inclined to use a different system if we had a different one in place because of the frustrations with Blackboard, that maybe one of the others would be more positively received. I think the fraction is between 20 and 25% right now.
I think Blackboard currently has a user base of about 51% market share, about the right around half market share, and I think Moodle itself is something like 18 or 20%.
Oh, nationwide?
Share. Nationwide.
Okay, and I was thinking of the number of the classes at UAF that use Blackboard.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I think that's down in the 20s. What? Yes. Okay, we will include them as well, Joy. Anything else?
I just wanted to say I taught a couple of classes last year on Moodle. If you'd like to actually have some practical comments on it, I think it's probably comparable to what we have in Blackboard, but just different problems. So I'd be happy to.
Okay.
New problems, yeah.
Well, thank you. So you can perhaps contribute some of that when we get online and give us some more details. Thank you. And Diane.
Hi. Yeah, I'm from a rural campus, the Kuskokwim campus, and I don't use Blackboard, and I teach a lot of distance because I don't know if you've ever sat and walked someone who lives in a village with a slow connection through some of the Blackboard issues, but it will drive you insane. And I'm barely sane right now, so I had to drop the Blackboard completely. But I'm going to access the Center for Distance Ed on creating just, you know, a really nice blog spot. They have a I don't know what the kind of language to use, a framework or something, a template, so to speak, that you can almost create your own version of Blackboard, but just without as many difficulties. So anyway, I like that we're thinking about something else, and I'd like to be part of that dialogue. So, thank you.
Anyone else?
I'd like to chime in for not one size fits all. If we find that, you know, 53% of faculty would prefer Moodle, throwing away Blackboard and switching to Moodle would be a terrible idea. So I would definitely like to. It doesn't help with the licensing cost issue, but definitely having multiple options, right? Some might run their course blog style, right, on local or remote. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, well, I'm skeptical that the university would be able to handle two subscription-based services, but we may be able to discuss some other options the faculty can use under certain circumstances. And there are other problems with going outside of the system to run your class. But, yeah, I understand your point. All right, let's take a break now. It is 5 minutes to 2, and we'll reconvene in 5 minutes. Thank you.
No, be on the telephone. Someone in the village.
Marco.
I'm going to go crazy. Oh, Patty. Were you sitting back here? Oh, hey.
Working at the University of Culturally.
I think what it's going to boil down to.
September 18, actually, the application date.
Oh.
You know that things change. So that note that you're taking the application. Oh, I see.
Are you doing something relating to the fact?
We have some thoughts. We have done a little bit of work with ecosystems with lakes. We have done some mapping, classification, LAMP to cover that. Okay, do you do that?
Okay.
We've been doing this today, Seth, yeah.
or for the food data, and we have a student that is working in classification.
Okay.
So, Alex,
did you bring
No, in the room.
Sorry, that sort of reaction.
Using L-band SAR.
So you did that, the mapping of the...
Yes, we're working with Hero. Hero and City.
No, yeah, because we're going to go for this.
So that's due on the 18th, so that's a free thing.
Around
for the next, for this week, effectively. For me, the flux measurement we have for the
All right, everyone please be seated and we'll resume the meeting. Hello, everyone. Please be seated, and we'll resume the meeting. Right, the next item on the agenda is discussion item C, request from libraries for Faculty Senate reapportionment. Now, what's happened here is that the libraries have now moved out of the College of Liberal Arts, and the Dean of Libraries reports directly to the Provost. The library faculty have approached Faculty Senate and asked for a formal reapportionment of Faculty Senate representation because they would like to have their own seat on Faculty Senate rather than being represented through CLA as they are now. So, this reapportionment, according to our bylaws, is now done with accreditation or upon two-thirds vote of the Senate. So we did reapportionment 2 years ago in the fall,
with together with accreditation. This time it would be, if we do it, would be on a two-thirds vote of this body, of the Senate. So right now what I'm doing is bringing the issue in front of you. I am also going to bring some proposed changes to the bylaws in a moment, but first I wanted to explain why we're looking at reapportionment in the first place. So is there any discussion on this? We have a representative from libraries here, Karen Jensen. Would you like to say anything on this point?
I actually have a statement that they asked me to bring, but you just actually said all of it, so I won't repeat it.
Well, excellent. So I got it right. All right. So what happens then is that the Faculty Senate will ask the Provost's Office for an official count of the number of qualifying faculty in each unit. Qualifying faculty are those who are tenure track, research, or term faculty. All right, and we get those numbers from the Provost's Office. They do it in October. We will get those numbers in late October. So we don't know the numbers right now. I would like us to consider any changes to the bylaws and the method of reapportionment before we see the numbers. All right? So this spreadsheet that you have, yes?
Can I ask a question? If somebody's got a joint appointment and it's 50-50 in an institute and a department, how are they counted?
If any part of your joint appointment is in an academic unit, you are counted in the academic unit.
Any proportion, even if it's a quarter time?
Yes. Because you are promoted and reviewed by that academic unit. And so that is considered your primary appointment, even if it's not the majority of your time.
Right.
Okay. And the details of all this, if any of you want to peruse them, are in the bylaws of the in that blue handbook that Jane Harvey has sent to all of you. It's also online. So we no longer assign fractions of a faculty member. It's all based on the primary appointment of each individual faculty member. Okay? So now, please, in your agenda, look at this spreadsheet. It's attachment 6, 184/6. And this is a spreadsheet that I drew up for information purposes. This is for you to see what the numbers of faculty are right now, or not right now, from 2 years ago in October 2010, what that translated to in terms of representation on the Senate, and how that would have been different with the changes to the bylaws that I'm suggesting we consider. All right? So the first column is the number of faculty October 2010 for each unit. The second column is the number of senators that we have now, and this is calculated based on a target of 35 senators and a rule that each unit has a minimum of 2. So if the unit qualifies, if it gets enough faculty to be above the threshold for representation, then it starts out with 2, not with 1. All right? Then the third column is the number of senators if, again, the target is calculated for 35 senators, but you take away that rule that there must be a minimum of 2 senators per unit. The difference is that the 4 units that would have had, the 4 smallest units would have 1 senator rather than 2, and the total number would be 35. Under the current system, because of those 4 units that just by the number of faculty would have one representative, they each have 2 instead, according to this minimum 2 rule, and so the total number of senators that we have on the Faculty Senate now is 39, not 35. It's due to this minimum 2 senators rule. The last column there is the number of senators that would fall out from the calculations if the target were 39 and you take away this rule about a minimum 2 senators. So the last column would be purely proportional to the number of faculty in each unit, but it would end up at the same number of senators that we have now. All right? And some of this
is summarized in that those text items on the right. On the bottom, you see the number of faculty needed for a certain number of senators. You can compare this to the number of faculty in 2010 in each of those units just to see where everyone fell out. Again, this is all for information for you to think about the implications of the changes in the bylaws that are being proposed here. These changes are just brought up for discussion today. We won't vote on them until October. All right. So any questions about this spreadsheet first, and then we'll go on to the proposed changes in the bylaws.
I'm just confused why
can you talk into the microphone, please?
I'm just confused. It looks like it's affecting just four units. Why we would go forward with that when there's two members here. Each member comes with a different perspective and gets different ideas back from the meeting.
Sure. Okay, so let's go on to the first motion then that addresses that question of a minimum of two senators. So the draft motion that's in your attachment 184/7. This one says the UAF Faculty Senate moves to amend the bylaws, da 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 da. This amendment removes a requirement that all represented units have at least two senators. In the rationale, the rationale explains the reason for bringing this before the Senate. The problem with having two representatives from small units is that the number of people in that unit who are expected to participate in Faculty Senate can be as high as a third of the unit, and that's for every year. So if you're going to, if someone wants to drop off the Faculty Senate, then there are only, let's say it's the smallest possible unit, that would be 9 faculty. Then you would have 2 representatives out of those 9. A third person would be an alternate. Let's say one of those 2 representatives wanted to go off the Faculty Senate. You then have 6 possibilities for finding another Faculty Senate member, and this continues on into the future. If you have, if people want to serve 1 or 2 terms, then you're rotating among those 9 people. Each person would have to serve 2 out of every 6 years on the Faculty Senate. So this, on the face of it, this is an unusual burden on individual faculty. Now, one could say, well, you just leave it to them to sort it out. The problem there is that if there are not enough willing people in the unit to serve, you can end up with either vacant seats or people who are not very well suited or are not representative of their unit. In other words, they were not actually chosen by the faculty in their unit. They're just there by default because they're the only person willing to serve. And so that does not seem to benefit either the unit or the Faculty Senate to have people who are either not representative or they're not willingly. That is the reason for proposing that we drop this requirement. We've already seen problems recruiting Faculty Senate members in one of these 3 smallest units, and I expect to see problems in another one soon. I'm referring to the 2 smallest units. The number of representatives for the other 2, School of Education and School of Management, you can't predict at this point the number of representatives they would have in the next calculation, because that depends on the total number of faculty at the university as well as the proportion, as well as the number of faculty in those units. So it's the fraction of the total number of faculty that determines whether a unit is represented or not. So that's why I'd like to settle this before we get the numbers, so that we're not settling it in order to engineer a particular result for a particular unit. Anybody want to comment on all this? David, please.
I just wanted to also point out, one of the dangers of a move like this is it starts to make us look more like, say, a House of Representatives, where you have the largest units having a very large say and the smaller units having a very small say, small representation. And so that's certainly an issue that I'm sure some folks here are thinking about. One thing that I would offer to ameliorate that at least a little bit is the fact that alternates can serve on faculty senate committees, which is actually where most of the most important work is done on the faculty senate. And so there could be essentially an understanding that that folks who are in the small units that are faculty alternates, they would be absolutely welcome and perhaps even invited to participate in committee work. We are not often struggling to turn people down who are volunteering for committee work.
Yeah, and I'll agree with that. All alternates are eligible to serve on any of the committees. We always invite them to, and we usually get few people agreeing to do that. Every year there are one or two alternates who agree to serve on the committees. But for small units who wish to have a larger say, that's a very good approach. You put your alternates on committees. The other thing to point out is that the Faculty Senate rarely makes decisions based on the number of votes, yay or nay. It's almost always a consensus or a very small number of votes against something. And so really the effect of or the influence that units have is done through the committees, and on the floor of the Senate it's by people actively participating in discussions. Yes, Ken.
I fully agree with you that...
Are you speaking to the microphone?
I fully agree that the vote isn't the material factor here, because the larger schools within the UAF will control a vote, and we have very few adversarial votes in this body. So it's not the vote. It's the voice that I view as the most important part. And with the U.S. Senate, for instance, or the U.S. Congress, I think it's very, very important that Alaska, being so small in numbers, has two people representing the voice of Alaska. And that's similar to what I view this as. It's not the number of votes that we have. You know, anybody looking at the numbers realizes if it gets down to a voting thing, any of the small schools, they don't have a prayer. But it's the voice that having two people from a school to be able to represent two people within a school will many times see things differently. And one will see one angle, another sees another angle. I think it's very, very important that we don't shut out or minimize the voices of the smaller schools. So I would be an advocate, keep it in here. If it's a problem where people cannot, a school has so few members that they can't get the people to serve, I would think that a more conducive mechanism would be to allow them to opt out for a year for a second representative, but to keep that to minimum so that schools that do want to have a voice can have a voice. Even if they don't have enough votes to control anything, they have a voice. Thank you.
I will point out that this is just a discussion item now. We can come up with alternate ideas. One that has not been outlined in your package is that instead of removing the minimum two senators rule, we could change that to a minimum number of faculty in the unit to have two representatives. So, for example, you might say that the unit needs a minimum of 15 in order to have two representatives on the Senate, something like that. That's just an idea I throw out there for consideration. That would mean that units with 23, 24 faculty would still have two representatives, regardless of this rule. Yes, please.
I sort of want to second what was just said. I think it's important to keep, I would say it's important to keep the two senators per unit, because if the main drivers are the unwillingness or not being representative for the unit, I think if we cut to one, we make it worse. Because if you cut to one, first of all, the responsibility increases per person. So they have to carry the entire vote for the unit. So I think you will find that less people are willing to join. And if you keep the two, I mean, three things can happen. Either both of them don't care, then cutting one won't change anything. both of them care, cutting one doesn't change anything, and if one of them cares and the other one not, then at least there's a balance. But if you cut that to one, the likelihood of getting one that doesn't care and has 100% of influence increases, I think. So I think it's, I'm not sure if it's, if this is the only driver, I'm not sure if that's enough. I don't think that we gain enough to make it useful.
And point out there's another aspect to this. It's not just whether or not the representative cares. It's also whether the representative or whether the person is actually representing the faculty from the unit. If it's somebody that those faculty are confident in as a representative to the Senate, or is it just the default person who actually is not a good voice for that unit but is the only person willing to step forward? So there's that second aspect as well. Anyone else want to comment? Okay, please think about this. Talk to your units, especially those of you from the smaller units. We will have a formal vote on this at the October meeting. If anyone would like to have an online discussion about it, just let us know and we'll start one. Okay, there are two more motions related to reapportionment, though, so I'm just going to keep going. You can come back to this if you have a thought on it. So attachment 184/8 is another draft motion, and this one says UAF Faculty Senate moves to amend the bylaws. This amendment increases the target number of elected seats in the Faculty Senate. The motion is written to increase the number from 35 to 39 in order to preserve the number of people that we have on the Senate now rather than decreasing by 4 people. And my view is that this is a good idea because we already have trouble staffing all of our committees. And we also seem to function well at this level of, at this number of people. So I don't see a reason not to do it, and I do see a reason in favor of making this change to increase the target number to 39 so that we keep the size that we have now. And I think this is mainly necessary if we go ahead and drop that minimum 2 senators rule. So this would be step 2 that would follow dropping the other, follow passing the first motion. Anybody have a comment on this? Okay. The third motion is basically housekeeping. So this one says that the amendment modifies the bylaws regarding non-voting members of the Faculty Senate to conform with recent and current practice. When I was reading the bylaws about the process of apportionment and who represents whom, I realized that the section about non-voting members was grossly out of date. And so this motion is just to bring it up to date, and what I've done is to write in here our current practice, so that the Senate will be endorsing this current practice and making it a formal part of the bylaws. So there shouldn't be anything here that surprises you, except perhaps to see what was intended 15 years ago.
And just a point of clarification, I believe that the square brackets denote deletions and the bold caps represent additions, correct?
Any discussion on this one? All right, again, you'll have another chance at this in the October meeting when we bring these up for a vote. And if, in the meantime, again, you want to have an online discussion or you want to suggest a third way, just contact our Faculty Senate office. Yes, Jennifer.
Yes, Jennifer. What was the past practice on this? I really don't know why where this one is coming from. Were the non-voting members voting in?
So you are one of the non-voting members
that's
now.
That's why I'm asking. Yeah.
And so, what do the non-voting members do? They participate in discussion.
Right.
Yes. You simply don't vote, but otherwise you're here at the table.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's what is being reaffirmed. Nothing nothing changes.
What changes is who those six non-voting members are. And so we're not changing the three that are allocated to the three faculty unions. We are changing the others. One of them was originally intended to be one non-graduate student and one graduate student. In practice, we have one student who comes from ASUAF, and that's normally the president of ASUAF, although it's their prerogative to pick who they want to send. Likewise, staff counsel. The language in the original bylaws that's still in there now talks about APT. This is effectively exempt and non-exempt employees. But as long as I've been on the Faculty Senate, there has been no one's worried about having non-exempt and exempt people from staff represented on the Faculty Senate. Instead, we have someone from staff counsel, and staff counsel chooses who they want to send to us. And normally it's the president, but this semester will probably be their vice president or president-elect. And the third change in here is that the original said one professional school dean and one college dean selected by the dean's council. The practice has been one dean or director selected by the provost.
I asked for volunteers at provost council, and anyone who volunteers is chosen.
Yes, but I think you have the authority to make the appointment. Sydney.
Is the addition of adjunct union representative new?
No. All I did was put an and in between the unions.
And do they normally send a representative?
No.
Can we encourage them to?
I don't even know who to contact.
Okay.
Frankly. That is really an inactive union as far as I know. But I don't see any reason to eliminate that seat.
I think adjunct faculty would appreciate knowing there was an opportunity to participate, even as a non-voting member.
I can certainly find the contact information. I believe the president is located in Anchorage, if I'm not mistaken. The contact information I'll give to Jennifer.
Can you run through which six they are? Because I'm coming up with seven for some reason. I have one student representative, one that's a dean or done by the provost, one from the registrar's office, one from staff council, and then one from each of the three unions, and even though the adjunct isn't officially hasn't sent one, that would make seven. Am I adding wrong?
Yeah, you're not adding wrong. When I made these changes, I didn't add them up. And so this phrase that refers to six non-voting members is not right. So originally there were two students, and what I've done in here is to change that to one student. There were two deans, and I've changed that to one dean. So actually that term six ought to be changed as well. So it was six plus three from the unions, and now it's more like four plus three from the unions. So good point. I need to fix that. Anyone else? Peter.
Yeah, just relates to something earlier. I don't know if it should be an online discussion or not, but it's in terms of how people are associated to their institutes and departments based on the numbering system. If you're saying that if they've got a quarter time position where three quarters of their work and everything is in an institute, they're still counted in the college, even
yep.
though. Okay.
Yes.
So that means they officially their faculty senate representation is through the college where they only actually have a quarter of their time.
Correct.
Okay.
Tenure resides in the college.
Right.
Yeah. The other problem is that people's fractions divided between an institute and a college changes from year to year.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's just if it's an institute, it's a 100% person at that institute.
That's right. And so in 2010, the number of faculty who were 100% in IARC was 10. And number of faculty 100% in GI was 17.
Okay.
Anything else?
All right, so you'll see these motions again in October.
It's right in front of here. All right.
All right, next item on the agenda, general education revitalization. And we will have this discussion led by Alex Fitz, and Rainer Newberry will also chime in.
Rainer has a handout that's going around, and some of you probably have already seen some version of this handout and maybe already heard some version of this spiel, but it doesn't hurt to hear it again because it's a very important process. I'm the interim dean of general studies, and as such, I will facilitate this process as much as I can, but I'm the outgoing chair of the committee. We are currently searching for a new chair, someone who will be dedicated and enthused about general education reform. So if there are any volunteers or nominees, please let Rainer know. So this process, as you know, has been going on for several years. There are probably some people in this room who've served on previous incarnations of this committee. And last year, the committee made a lot of progress in terms of looking at the student learning outcomes that had been passed by the Senate in May of 2011 and kind of mapping out how those would fit onto the university regulations, Board of Regents requirements. And then in June of this year, five of us went to a general education reform institute that lasted for 5 days. And Dave Valentine went, and Paul Lair, Rainer, I went, and Annie Armstrong from the School of Education. And it was a very productive meeting. And we came back with an action plan, which a version of which is what was just handed out to you. And so what we wanted to let you know today was what the plans are for this coming year, what we hope to achieve, and particularly what's going to happen this semester, because there's a lot of activity related to this semester. So the first thing that we want to do is have basically an education public relations campaign to let everybody know what's happening, to make people aware of those student learning outcomes that were passed a year and a half ago, because a lot of faculty are not aware of them. So we want to get those out, have people thinking about them. Within a couple of days, an email should be going out to all of the deans asking them to mention this process in their convocations, asking them to find a way to have this information communicated to faculty in their colleges or units. Members of the committee are volunteering to go facilitate these discussions if it's needed. And we also plan to have at least one general open forum to discuss the issues that are going to be in the poll, which is coming up in October. So over the next month or 6 weeks, there should be information sessions around campus, and some people have already heard some version of this in earlier information sessions. And then in October, we're going to have a poll, which will go out electronically, and the questions that right now we think are going to be on the poll or on the handout, and these may change, and they have changed based on previous discussions that we've had and will continue to change as we go through these information sessions based on the feedback that we're getting. But they ask sort of the basic questions that will form the framework for the changes that are going to be made. The principal one is the number of credits. Currently we're at 39 credits. Should we go to the Board of Regents minimum, which is 34 credits? It seems from previous feedback, from forums that were held not last year but the year before, that most people think that the answer to that should be yes. We'll see what we get from the poll, but if the answer to that is yes, then the next question is, how do we do that? We've already given, as a committee, a lot of thought to how to do that, but we don't want to impose that on the faculty. And so the other questions deal with kind of ways that the student learning outcomes can be represented while honoring the 34 credits and the Board of Regents requirements. And there are general questions about things like upper division writing requirements, upper division oral communication requirements, should there be a capstone experience, and things like that. So then after we have the results of the poll, the plan is to work very closely with the different colleges and departments to think about the ways that their curriculum might need to be amended, tweaked, modified in order to fit with the results that we get from the poll and the student learning outcomes. And the committee members will work really closely with departments and colleges in order to facilitate that process and that discussion, with the goal then of getting the recommendations back from the colleges and departments by the spring of 2013, at which point the committee will have a sort of proposed model of what we think the curriculum should look like, which then will go out for more feedback. Is the timeline on the handout runner? I don't remember.
I think I left those as vague.
Okay. So then the ultimate goal would then be the following year, 2013-14, to have this model curriculum go through another feedback cycle and then start the process for approval with the goal of phasing in 2014. Want to add anything?
This is scary stuff.
Holy cow.
Thank you. This is scary stuff. We're finally trying to work real hard to make this a reality. One of the things that was impressed upon us at this meeting was don't create a plan and then give it to the faculty, but rather try to get the faculty, as many as possible, involved from the nearly start. That's what we're trying to do here. Fundamentally, we want the faculty to do two things. We want a definite yes or no. Should we cut down the number of credits? And this is going to have incredible implications for two major colleges, CLA and CNMS. And before we insist that this happens, we want to make sure that the faculty really feel it. Now, the faculty have to make an informed decision. It's not just a matter of walking up to a faculty member on the street and saying, well, what do you think, 39 or 36? I mean, this is dumb, or 34. This is dumb. We need to have as many faculty as possible educated about the consequences, about the implications. We want the faculty thinking about this over the course of the next month, 6 weeks. We want them discussing it. We want people angry. We want people excited. We want people emotional. We want people wanting to do something about making things better. We, the Faculty Senate, are the logical group in lots of ways to spearhead the educational, we want to do something, we need to do something, business. On the other hand, we have to get the faculty as a whole to, at least a significant fraction, to say, yes, we really need to do this. Because otherwise, we're just going to keep drifting on and on and on and on and on with the same thing that we know doesn't work very well. So a lot of work. We need, God help us, everybody here contributing in some fashion, if only buttonholing people in the hallways and talking about it. We need as many people as possible to participate in the poll. We need follow through from that, and hopefully the poll itself will stir up people enough that they'll be saying, yes, I want to work on this. I want to deal with this. I want to spend all of my evenings from 10 o'clock until 3 a.m. every night thinking about this. Well, maybe. But that's where we need to be if we're actually going to make this a reality. The purpose of this announcement, as it were, is to try to get the Faculty Senate at least excited, interested, scared about this whole business. And the one final piece is that, frankly, this all depends upon having a chairperson for the committee. As you can see, Alex made a marvelous chairperson last year. She did so well, she's been promoted. She's now interim dean for general studies. We're looking for somebody who's tenured. We're looking for somebody who's willing to put out time. We've got a couple of people that we're negotiating with. Of course, we've told them all kinds of lies about how this will not take up any time. We're still trying to find somebody. And if you've got some ideas, if you've got a person in mind, if you know somebody who's recently had a lobotomy, gosh.
We want somebody good, Reiner.
Oh, right, sorry. This makes them willing, okay? Yeah, you're right. It's sort of right, agreed. Anyway, we need a chairperson for this committee. We need your support. We need Or if, in fact, this is the wrong way of going, that would be useful too. But we really need to make some progress. We really need to make some progress. Thanks.
Okay, and I would emphasize that this really is a huge deal. This is changing a large part of the structure of education for every undergraduate in this place. And
right,
hasn't been done
for
20 years. And it will also affect the faculty and what we're teaching and who's in our classes and how we evaluate them and all sorts of things. So this is a really big deal. It's exciting, and it's also kind of daunting. And I will point out that the chancellor in his remarks said this, what he thought was the most important thing the Faculty Senate was going to do this year. So, Jane.
Runner, wouldn't you like to be the chair?
Yes, I would like to be the chair. I cannot do it.
Really?
I'm already chair of Curricular Affairs Committee and chair
That's
of Curriculum
right.
Review
but
Committee.
Maybe
I've tried that, okay? I've tried that. I really have, okay?
Yeah.
And who knows, okay?
I've been chair of those for many, many years.
I know. At any rate, thank you. So the structure is that this committee, GERC, it's a subcommittee of Curricular Affairs Committee, which is to keep the thing closely tied in with the Faculty Senate as opposed to the first attempt, which is something that Dana Thomas attempted and was outside of the Faculty Senate structure and basically got turned down by the Faculty Senate. So we're trying to make this as much.
Right. And so this subcommittee has partial membership from Faculty Senate and partial from outside of the Senate, but it is under the purview of Curricular Affairs Committee. Yes. Joy, did you have something to say? Would you come up, please, and use the microphone? Hang on, microphone.
Hi. I just wanted to ask if it would be possible to get maybe a one-page, some talking points. I remember very well how contentious it was 20 years ago when we introduced the core, and I think, no, because I was, 22 years maybe. Just a one-page of some of the most important talking points, and I can certainly get a conversation going with all the different things I'm doing with faculty.
Yes, we can certainly do that. And anybody who's on the committee, any of the five of us who were at the Institute this summer, would be delighted to talk to you about it and answer questions if anybody really, wants to have a conversation about it or has questions about what's going on.
And I would just like to just kind of amplify just one of the things that Alex mentioned, which is that this effort, it's easy to sort of think of a core curriculum as something that happens during a student's freshman and sophomore years. And what we are trying to undertake is essentially a rethinking of exactly what's going on through a student's curriculum here. The idea is for this no longer to be sort of assigned to the first 2 years of a student's career, but rather integrated across their entire career with us. And so they would be achieving the learning outcomes from courses within the general education curriculum that we specify, but also from their majors. And so we would be looking at how to achieve some of those learning outcomes, advancement in critical thinking, civic engagement, things of those nature throughout their entire curriculum in the major as well as through the general studies.
Remember how this whole WO, maybe you don't. Some of you remember how this whole WO business happened. We woke up one morning and it was like, guess what? We need to teach WO courses. We don't want the same kind of thing to happen this time around. We want the faculty to know what's going on, to agree to what's going on, to recognize the need for what's going on, and to do their best to deliver it to everybody.
Any more comments on this? All right, let's move on to public comments and questions. Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment? Yes, Dina, please come up.
I'm Sina Anahita, and I'm in Sociology, Women's Studies, and Northern Studies. And I would like to speak about the power of shared governance and the fact that over this past summer, shared governance was ignored by the administration when they decided to close the Women's Center and the Office of Multicultural Affairs and Diversity. Those decisions, the discussions took place while we were off contract. Students were not here. Staff council also did not meet. The decision to close the Women's Center has been rescinded. Office of Multicultural Affairs and Diversity has closed. It is gone. That, you know, once it moves out of our grasp, we're not going to be able to get it back. Shared governance should have been, we should have been part of that discussion. Board of Regents policy is very clear that the Board of Regents intends faculty, staff, and students to be involved on matters that affect their welfare. And I think that we certainly have heard from other people today the importance of supporting students. We're all faculty members. We know how important it is to support faculty. We need to support staff. And it was really very upsetting for many of us that these decisions were made and we had no input on matters that affect our welfare. One of the foundations of shared governance is clear communication, two-way communication. And in this case, there's still the communication about the closing of OMAD and the potential closing of the Women's Center has been obfuscated. So as late as last week, there were two newscast interviews with the administration, a member of the administration, where it is still denied that OMAD is closed. And it is closed. You go to the OMAD office, it's closed. It's now got another office in it. It closed on July 20. So I want us as faculty members and as faculty senate to really push for the principle of shared governance. It is our right as faculty members, and it's also to the benefit of everyone at the university. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Are there any other comments or questions from the public? All right, we move on to governance reports. Staff Council, and I see Claudia Koch in the back. Would you please come up? Thank you.
Hey, all, mostly I'm here today to introduce myself. I'm Claudia Koch. I'm the Vice President of the Staff Council here. I'm pretty new to UAS. It's been 2 years, so excited to be here. I'm looking forward to a great year working with Faculty Senate, and I hope we have a great working relationship. And just like you said before, Staff Council also passed, we're working on a resolution right now, affirming a commitment to shared governance, that we want to make sure that in the future our voice is heard with four major changes affecting staff, faculty, and students. And we also, most of you probably seen it on the Cornerstone, we put out a survey, a work-life survey, Staff Alliance did it, which is made up of all the vice presidents and presidents of all the MOUs and statewide. And it closed yesterday, and we had 830 responses. So right now we're going through the responses, and hopefully we'll publish them and analyze the results very soon and share it with you. But this will give us a great input in which way we should focus our efforts this year. And that's all I have for right now.
Any questions for Claudia? All right, thank you for that report. ASUAF, is there anyone here from ASUAF? Not today. UNAC.
For those of you who don't know me, thank you, Jennifer. I'm Debu Mishra. I'm the Organizational Vice President of United Academics. And I'll just take a few minutes to kind of first welcome Jennifer and David as the new leadership of the Faculty Senate, and just to kind of reiterate what Tina and many others have come forward is, the shared governance should be our primary goal here. There are three units of shared governance. The Faculty Senate is one of them. The administration is one of them. And then we have the Board of Regents. Now, UNAC doesn't really play any role in that. I am here to work with the Faculty Senate, and I really look forward to it. I'm excited this year with the new leadership, and look forward to working with you all, and I expect or hope that there will be some reciprocation on our working relationship. The other thing that I want to bring up is the upcoming promotion and tenure. This has already been discussed. UNAC will appreciate if there is an open forum available to the candidates, and that has been brought up. So I just needed to reiterate that. The market adjustment letters are in progress, and each of the faculty members will be receiving their market adjustment letters shortly. Having said that, I really need to thank the chancellor for stepping up to apologizing for the Women's Center, the the whole governance, shared governance failure, and I am just looking forward to working with you all. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? All right. UAFT, Jane.
I just wanted to say that the Joint Healthcare Committee will be meeting on September 20th. So we should have a report from there at the next meeting.
And for those of you who are not aware of it, the membership of the Joint Healthcare Committee is largely drawn from the unions because this is a collective bargaining issue. And so we get our reports from that committee through the union representatives. Yes, please.
Can I make just a quick comment? I forgot something. Okay, so the only other thing that I really wanted to emphasize is that when the Senate takes a decision on anything, for example, the dependent tuition waiver, I really request the Senate to look into the collective bargaining agreement, because if that is being violated, we are in a bad position. It's a negotiation item, so it will be helpful if the unions are involved in that process. Thanks.
All right, let's move on to item 9, members' comments, questions, and announcements. And this is your open time to bring up any topics you like. Are there any comments or announcements from members of the Faculty Senate? Yes, Jane.
On September 24th at 5:30 in Scheibel, there's going to be a talk by a visiting scholar, Professor Sharon Bird, on navigating barriers, and we're passing these around to everybody, so if you could share with your colleagues.
Can you all hear this? Can you all hear the microphone, please? We have people online, and it's hard for them to hear.
Sorry. On September 24th at 5:30 in Scheibel, there's going to be a talk by Professor Sharon Bird, a visiting scholar, on navigating barriers. And then she's also speaking at the Women Faculty Luncheon on the 25th. So if you'd share that with your colleagues, I'd appreciate it.
Other announcements or comments? Yes, Franz.
I'm Franz Meyer. I'm the chair of the Faculty Development Assessment and Improvement Committee. And I just wanted to raise your attention to a slight change of activities in the Office for Faculty Development. It's led by Joy. And so beginning this September, actually, Joy will be approaching the colleges directly and will be negotiating a plan of different faculty development activities per college. And so she will be starting in September with the School of Education. They probably already know about that. So Joy approached all the different department chairs, and there was a plan developed for every different department, for every different school, which kind of faculty development is needed and required and wished by the faculty. So I want to encourage everybody here to talk to the faculty in their different units, to actively participate in those activities. There's a requirement for faculty development for everybody that's not tenured yet. So this is your chance to get tailored education on faculty development, tailored to your department. So the schedule is in September, School of Education, it's School of Education's turn. In October, the College of Natural Science and Mathematics is on, and then in November we have the College of Engineering and Mines. Please participate. And please encourage your colleagues to participate.
Thank you. Any other comments, announcements? All right. Next item is committee chair comments. So these are reports or comments specifically on behalf of the committees. There are two attachments in your agenda that are committee meeting reports. One is from the Committee on the Status of Women. The other is from Faculty Development, Assessment, and Improvement. Do any of the committee chairs wish to make a comment at this time? Yes, John Dean. Please come up.
John is the chair of the Research Advisory Committee.
Okay, first, it looks like we're going to have our first meeting of the semester a week from today on Monday. But there are a couple of issues I wanted to bring up. One of the things I'd like the committee to look at this year is to get an accounting of where our F&A money has gone to, not for any nefarious purpose, but for the purpose of to highlight actually the wonderful things that this university does that research actually pays for. So to sort of get credit where credit is due, and I thought that might be a fun topic. But a bigger thing is coming on September 27th at the Regents meeting is they will be voting on whether or not the University of Alaska should have its own research foundation. UAA currently has its own research foundation. Many other universities do this. It's an easier way for us to have direct support for our research engine through from businesses. As one of the persons designing this is coming mostly from the Vice Chancellor for Research and the Associate Vice Chancellor for Research, Dan White, and Adam Krasnacki. We need something that moves at the speed of business, is his approach. Our current effort with our enterprises are very cumbersome, and it's difficult for local businesses or other foundations to give us a lot of money. So we're hoping that the Regents will vote in our favor on the 27th, and that this will really change the way we can get research funding into this university and hopefully loosen the noose of, you know, tightening federal funding. So that's all I wanted to say. Thanks.
Thank you, John. The other thing I would note is that you all might not know is that the provost has told us that the new dean of the graduate school, John Eichelberger, will be here starting September 26th. Is there any other committee chair comments or reports? No. How about a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
We are adjourned. Thank you very much.
5 minutes early.
We just got one of the ones that was in the room.
Exactly. I think.
Say hello to.